All right, it is that time once again. We are back in business. We are ready to go. It is the PGA Live Before Lock RBC Heritage. It's not the Masters, but that does not mean that we don't have a lot to talk about. I am Ben Raza. That is Eric Lindquist. Did you enjoy the Masters, sir?
Yes and no. Luckily, Will Zalatoris' top 5 and top 10 paid for my bets for the week. The other ones that did not hit, that was sad. Actually worked out about perfectly with him because I was about to bet an outright on him and just couldn't do it for whatever reason. And that would have been a huge sweat towards the end there. But otherwise, it was a lot of fun to watch. I think I got burned with Berger with a lot of other people here at Osmo. But for the most part, it was a phenomenal tournament. We're both higher on a Hideki through and through. So it was nice to see him get a breakthrough. Unfortunately, 20% of him I couldn't pay off at the end because of how bad Berger was.
That's true. Yeah, it was great to see Hideki win. I was super excited. Couldn't connect him. I had a string. Jason Day was a killer. Cantlay was unexplainable, and we're certainly going to talk.
And Rory, we were both on Rory, too.
I mean, that one was obviously one of the worst, but I was more willing to accept that. Like, I really did think there was a range of outcomes where it could go bad. I didn't think it'd go that bad, but Cantlay was just stunning. But you know what? The good thing about golf may not be the most prestigious event, but we still have another one, and it is a quality. Chat, it's good to see you. I feel fantastic. I am fully recovered. I was in bad shape yesterday. Don't even remember that show. I'm not going to lie. The fever is broke. I am good to go. It's good to see everybody here. Appreciate the support. Anyway, let's dive into it, sir. We've got waves. We've got weather. We've got withdrawals, not really, to be honest. The key thing I want to talk to you about, you know, we're back to 135-ish players off 88 from the Masters. This is the top 65 in ties and all that. So weather could be a factor. We'll see what it holds. It looks like Friday PM maybe has the advantage with the wind. What are you doing with weather? Is it a tee time stack thing or is it nothing?
So maybe not a tee time stack, but maybe having a feature where you get five guys from an early, like, okay, so that is a stack. Let's be serious. If you're going to go more than 3-3, it's definitely still leaning that way. Definitely Thursday AM is kind of where it looks like it's going to be the best. You have a coastal golf course. You've got a situation where multiple players can come out of that grouping from the front, post a number. Afternoon gets windier. It looks like gusts are only getting up to about like 15, 18 miles per hour there is what I saw. So it's not like something extreme, but it might be enough to be a slight advantage. And then Friday looks pretty darn benign comparatively for what this golf course generally has. And we saw last summer in June, this golf course played very tame. We had a tournament record out of Webb, a really fun golf tournament to be watching there. Going down towards the end, we had Abraham Mansur, who should have won that thing, strike the ball like a genius. But this golf course is going to be completely different. I do expect wind to matter a little bit more. I don't expect scoring to be nearly as low as what it was last year. And you know, I think that it'll definitely lend itself to maybe a little bit slight lean towards that Thursday AM, but nothing like gigantic for me.
Yeah, I'm basically the same way. You know, if you're building enough teams, certainly you can look to some correlated tee time stacks, but it's just so hard to pinpoint. It looks like it could be gusty and the guys may have a little edge on that AM PM. But again, I think it's pretty negligible. This course, you know, wind can be a factor. It's an interesting course, and we're going to talk about that here in a little bit because Harbortown is one of the more unique, you know, on tour, I'd say. But just looking at the tee times, I don't see anything, you know, if you're going like first round leaders, there's some guys going out early, as always. Charlie Hoffman's of the world, Chase Seifert, Doug Gim is a group that I may look to. I do want to ask you that. Do you look at the tee times in terms of, you know, you're a golfer. I'm obviously not. Do you think there's something too that like your group can get hot and you can kind of like drift off each other?
A little bit. It depends. I heard who was it during the Masters that was talking a little bit more about it? It was that second round. Two guys that Finau and somebody else that were just kind of playing off of each other. They were talking about going low together. It is nice when you have another guy in your group who's playing well, you kind of like feed off of each other, but come like final round time when it really matters, you're really going to play well or you're not. You're competing against the entire field. And I think, you know, you don't want to see a bunch of tee shots going wayward on the back nine on Sunday, but it tends to happen more than not when the pressure ramps up.
Yeah, I think, again, that's something, if I was splitting hairs and I had a true toss-up, maybe I would look to see where the guy's positioned. But other than that, I think there's easier things to kind of look at. It's not something that I'm too concerned about. So honestly, it's a pretty tame, you know, the withdrawals happened before pricing was really set. Guys like Bryson and a couple others decided not to play. The only out I see is Tyler McCumber. Didn't know he was in the tournament. Sorry, guy. He doesn't even have a pitcher. No offense to him.
Poor guy. He's not getting the respect. He's on the PGA Tour. You know how hard that is?
I can only imagine. It seems quite hard. These guys are good, as they say. All right, let's go to Masters aftermath, because I do think there's some continuation between that. I want to kind of break down what we're going to do there. Before I do, though, I want to talk about our sponsor, Monkey Knife Fight. If you guys are unfamiliar, they're prop-based contest, easy to play, not a huge time commitment. And it's easy to be competitive over there. It's just a different style of game, and it's not just PGA. They've got NBA. They've got UFC. Esports is big. Soccer as well. To get started, go to monkeyknifefight.com. Choose the game you want to play, the stakes, contest type, buy-in levels, all the things like a normal traditional site has. And even better, when you sign up, promo code AWESOMO, you get an instant first match deposit bonus of up to $50. Sign up today. Definitely worth checking out. But as we go over to the Masters, there's always a continuation of like, okay, who's playing the next week? And you've got some guys like DJ who I think they like have to play with the RBC sponsorship. You've got Cantlay coming off a really disappointing week. You've got Webb. You've got some pretty big names. But kind of what do you make of the top range? Did you think it was weaker or stronger than you kind of expected?
I think it's a little bit stronger. I can't remember the exact field, but I know we had Bryson in the hunt last year. You had Webb Simpson. This is a golf course that I think we're all kind of gravitating towards him in this upper range. I think it's probably a little bit stronger than what I would expect for a major, or for coming off of a major, coming off the Masters specifically, middle of April. I was really kind of pleasantly surprised. DJ, Cantlay, Simpson, Morikawa, those are some big names in golf. I guess you get the odd Cameron Smith thrown in there at 10-2 that makes it look a little bit different, but we'll also get to Zalatoris later. But that's a pretty nice core four of guys sitting on the upper range. Not many golf tournaments coming off of a major are going to draw those kind of names.
Yeah, it's not the worst by any stretch. And as we look at it, it's going to be, you know, it's to be expected. Some guys are just not going to want to play the week after a major. They want to splice out their schedules and whatnot. Harbour Town is also an interesting venue, and that's what I want to talk about most here before we get to the golfers, just quickly. So Harbour Town, par 71, it's not long, it's tree-lined. It really mitigates driving distance. So, like, what do you do when you have a track that is, I think, very unique?
Yeah, two of the last four winners here have actually lost strokes off the tee. Do you know how hard it is on the PGA Tour to be able to do that? Like, that's kind of an outlier, it looks like, for most winners in a golf tournament. You're generally hitting it in play, but even if you're just a little bit off the fairways, it's not very penal by any means. 7,100 yards, as you said, just a shorter golf course. You don't necessarily have to be out there banging driver around. I believe Bryson drove 16 last year with a 3-wood, or got pretty close. He was basically greenside there as they were going down towards the end of that final round. But really kind of a place where you're targeting that iron play. You're targeting those guys who can gain strokes around the green because they're very small greens. I believe 3,700 square feet per, one of the smallest numbers on tour. I really think that it's pretty straightforward in what you're kind of looking for. It's a horses for courses spectacular. I really like this golf tournament from a DFS perspective. I think it's generally been one of my more profitable weeks because certain guys just kind of emerge from the pack and make fantastic plays because their games just suit this place.
I do think there is something to that there are a lot of guys on tour that only have, it's not that they can't compete at other tracks, but they're just so much more behind the eight ball. They target a handful of weeks to really make their FedEx Cup points. And Harbour Town is a track like that. So we're going to have some names that maybe we don't talk about a lot. The last thing I want to say before we get into the golfers. You mentioned this before the show. I don't want to overreact to it, but the greens apparently are overseeded with POA. Is that correct?
Yeah, so basically overseeding, they basically are just putting a slab of grass on top of whatever the existing grass is there, and that's going to be Bermuda. So it's not technically Bermuda, and I've been trying to like look through strokes gained putting data because I think that there is a big difference because your POA, you're thinking of courses like Pebble, you're thinking of coastal things out here on the West Coast. Riviera has some POANA that shows up in them once in a while. It just kind of depends on the season for it. I was trying to figure that out because there is a distinct difference of those two surfaces in a lot of those pieces of data. You've got a guy like, well, I'm going to save him for later because I think he's going to be my hot take for sure. Ooh. But yeah, I've got a guy that for a T5 that hasn't done that this year, so that'll be exciting. And then you've got a guy like Webb Simpson who putts fantastic on these kind of surfaces as well, these overseeded POAs. So I like going to that kind of an idea. Not that he's a bad putter on Bermuda per se, but he's just substantially better on this type of POA.
Perfect segue. Let's get into it. Top end fade. I'm not saying that Webb Simpson's going to be a fade, but if you're looking to make a stand, he is going to be the chalk. He is projected with our ownership. I'll give you guys just a little sneak peek behind the glass. Our projections, by the way, are free, so you should go check those out. Absolutely worth it. You get a little peek behind the glass, but our ownership projections, which are proprietary for sure, Webb is over 20% projected, and I think that's very reasonable. He's the defending champ. He's great at this course. His game fits. You've mentioned off the tee is not important. You remove off the tee, Webb's probably the best player in the world. He's that good with the other skill sets, but you've got direct leverage with Patrick Cantlay and DJ to an extent. We have them projected significantly lower right now, hovering, you know, almost one half or one third of that ownership. So the simple question, do you leverage elsewhere and choose Webb, or do you leverage right off the top with two guys who are fantastic players, but not playing too well?
Well, I don't want to give away all the goods as well over on we do the pro plays, the expert player yes. exposures for GPPs. Looks like we all are pretty in lockstep on Webb Simpson. Alex Baker fills that out. I like sorting by his name a little bit first. It works out well. Then I go over to my guy, Ben. Then I go to my guy, Jason. No distinct priority on two and three there, but kind of going through it. We all love Webb on this top end. That makes a lot of sense. What I do find fascinating with you, though, is I believe it was Cantlay that was popping up as your number one, if I am correct about such a thing. So Patrick Cantlay, in terms of GPP exposure, somebody you're high on. Jason, we were exchanging notes before the show. Sounds like in round two, they were talking about on the Masters coverage, he's just kind of getting a little bit steep with the irons. He's like trying to work on something specifically. You don't want to hear about a guy trying to fix his swing in the middle of a major. That's not a very exciting thing to hear. We know the kind of upside he has, the ability to go low. He's one of the best all around players in the world. Somebody that I think has sparked upsides on easy golf courses, on difficult golf courses. This kind of fits the mold of what he would play well at. And so if it were a different situation where I just didn't know what his form was, like if I were blindly coming into this tournament and I saw the ownership that was going to Cantlay, I would obviously pull the trigger on going over it. But it's so hard coming off of some of this recent form, coming off of just a really, really gross showing at the Masters for me to like pull the trigger. So I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on him.
So, you know, just to go back to the Masters for a second, I mean, it's easy when you have hindsight, you can kind of twist some things, but truly I can tell you that Rory, he came in with some question marks. I believe that the ceiling is there, but the floor, you know, it can happen when you're struggling. Jason Day is an anomaly in a many senses. It comes and goes. He was terrible. Patrick Cantlay not competing to make the cut is something that there's nothing that I could look to even in hindsight to say that makes sense. So I am a little concerned with where that is because it was just so out of left field. But then I step back, he destroys Pete Dye courses. He destroys this course. And it's not just the results, which have been fantastic, third, seventh, and third. It's just his game fits. He does everything that I want. So you're really asking the age-old question, recent form versus long-term versus course history. And for me, with a guy who is so consistent, who gains in all four categories, I think that I'm willing to overlook what is going to be an outlier. So if Cantlay is projecting, if his ownership falls where we are projecting right now, I am jamming and I'll live with the results. Other than that, though, as we work down, because there are a couple other guys in the same range, What do you make of someone like Morikawa, who, again, fantastic player, also direct leverage off Webb, and Cam Smith as well, who he seems overpriced, but honestly, the way he's playing, it probably is warranted.
I think I was a little bit early on the Morikawa call. There's something going on with his putting. I don't know if it's mental. It's starting to show up in the data, too. If you just sort by strokes gained putting here on the season, out of those top tier guys, it is very rare to see somebody with nearly a stroke lost per event in a guy who is priced in the 10K range. They're generally all very, very good putters. We know that he can be the best iron player in the world, and that obviously is a fantastic fit for a golf course like this, but you still got to get the ball in the hole and be able to put up some numbers. I don't know. I'm kind of getting a little bit shy on him going towards the end of it. I guess I'm really shy on him and Cantlay this week, which is kind of a strange thing to be feeling, because they are just such superb iron players, and they have elite talent, and there's really nothing you can peg from a long-term form. But just recently here, not guys that I've been playing a whole lot. I want to see a little bit more. A T18 at the Masters is fine. The player is probably more of a course fit to this. T41 in a fantastic field, obviously, at the Players, so not anything to really scoff at. Coming off the win at the WGC, he has the upside. There's no question about it. So maybe at reduced ownership, I should rethink that, but kind of lighter on both this week.
Yeah, again, the ownership is playing a factor for me. You can just rarely can you find players of this caliber in a field like this that are not garnering a ton of interest. And I know there are legit concerns, and maybe their miscut equity is a little elevated, but I still think more often than not, it's worth it to take that plunge. So we'll see. But one of the other things that you can do as we work down kind of to this leverage value is the 9K range, where I don't think anyone's going overlooked. Everyone's garnering interest. Looks like no clear leverage here. But there's names. You start off with your boy Will Z, 9,700, working all the way down to Sungjae. And in between it, Hatton, Connors, Casey, and Fitzy. I mean, I think you can make a real case for any player in this entire range.
Will Z is going to be a big question mark for me as I'm kind of tweaking things, because there's two ways to look at this. One, he just got done putting up a T2 at the Masters. That's literally a solo two at the Masters. Yeah, phenomenal. Played phenomenal. Very, very happy to see. Glad, again, I didn't bet him outright. T5, top 10, worked out great. But I'm just kind of feeling like there's some burnout after the end of that. He has to be somewhat exhausted by that. There's no way that as a rational human being that you can have that kind of an unbelievable dream week and just kind of move on to the next. But I guess his demeanor just is one that maybe he's the kind of guy who can do that, just continue to ride the wave and go into this week. But right now, also going to be lighter. I did expect for ownership to be a little bit higher on him than where we have it sitting at currently. And that was really kind of the major reason that I was going to be light on him. So now that I see that the ownership Wednesday isn't really there the way that I thought it was, it might be a guy that I take an overweight approach to in the waning hours here. But originally was just planning on being light from an ownership perspective.
Yeah, I'm with you. Maybe I overrate things like this, but I consider when a guy breaks through and wins, when he maybe never will win again on tour, or has never won on tour, or a guy has a marquee splash in a major. It's not a red flag because it's an incredible achievement, and clearly they're playing great. It's just hard. It's a natural exhale to get right back at it. And you get a price hike, you get an ownership. Not that he's going to be chalk by any stretch, but you've got Ty Hatton right next to him. I like Fitzy as well. They have long-term experience. I know their games. I would rather go to them. The guy that I can't get right, and I don't even pretend to at this point, is Corey Connors. It's insane. He gets hole-in-ones now. It's just the full escapades. The guy is playing fantastic. I still believe that his around-the-green game can and will be a liability at times. He's the other guy in this range. I don't think that this is a good course for him. I really don't. Maybe peppers the greens, but they're small greens. You can get in a lot of trouble if you're just a little off with your irons here.
Yeah, Corey Connors, I mean, four straight top 15s. I really haven't been there for any of them. It's disturbing. I can tell you somebody who has been there for all of them. His name is Alex Baker, and he's very good at golf DFS. So I think if there's a reason to be looking that direction, I think it's defaulting to the best player in the world and just continuing to ride the wave on him there too. But I'm there with you. It's not a great course fit. He's somebody that I really don't know how he's just continuing to get by. He's not the best putter on planet Earth by any means. But yeah, making hole in ones will definitely help the DK scoring.
Oh, there's no doubt. And listen, he's really transformed his game. And he's always been a gold ball striker, but you're paying a premium. And for me, it's an easy find to find $200 to Hatton, to find $200 less to Fitzy. Paul Casey's kind of there. I'm indifferent to that. There's a lot of names though in here. Last question before we start getting into the mid ranges, do you feel comfortable starting in the nines?
I do. I feel actually fantastic with, so if I'm not going DJ or Webb, who in the 10K range, I kind of find it impossible for me not to have quite a bit of each. I love Dustin Johnson on any golf courses. Like, you don't win that many tournaments and not be good everywhere that you go. A phenomenal putter, an underrated putter, I would say, in a lot of aspects. Probably the only like true bomber of that top group. But doesn't really matter on this golf course. He's still going to compete, and I still think he's going to be very good. But in that 9K range, Tyrrell Hatton, somebody that I'm very high on this week. We've seen him just kind of be just steady Eddie outside of that one player's miscut of, what is it, four of his last five tournaments, top 25s. I think just with the strength of this field, I don't really see an issue going to him in this range and kind of making him a featured guy. Look at his strokes gained approach. Just somebody that around the greens is pretty darn solid as well. I have no problem getting over the field on Tyrrell Hatton and kind of riding that instead of Corey Connors. I know that you're paying a little bit more ownership going towards Hatton, but I really have no issue there. And I think I do like a lot of my builds kind of in this mid nine range, having like two, three guys from that range, as opposed to just having like one up top. So one of my big tournament teams, I'm assuming that I'm just going to avoid that 10K range altogether.
Yeah. Balanced is definitely, I see some, and just to touch on Hatton even more, like 18th of the Masters for him, that's a big step up. He's been dominating everywhere except majors, and it's good to see him, you know, potentially long-term, maybe get it together at Augusta where he's done absolutely nothing so far. So I definitely feel comfortable there. And Fitzy has been vocal. He loves this course. His game should love this course. It's everything that you kind of want. All right, let's go to make the cut. Before I do, a couple things. One, you already told the chat, I was going to bring up that smoothie. It looks pretty good. I'm not going to lie.
It's fire.
It's fire. Good. I'm going to ask for some likes. Let's hit the like button. Let's pump this up. We're going to have a good time tonight. We got a lot of stuff to talk to. And one of the things I want to mention, Nightbot already said it because it's ahead of me, is UFC 261. I guess they go in order, but I swear to God, it's like UFC 243, and then now it's 261. They just skipped 18 of them. But
I think it's been Super Bowl 55 for like 7 years in a row. Yeah, no one knows. I don't really know. What is it?
In the octagon. Actually, two people do, Jason Floyd and Pete the Heat, and they'll be getting you ready. But Usman and Masvidal, of course, is set for April 24th, and we have a deal. MMA monthly pass, 50% off your first month. Bossmo plus MMA when you use the promo code UFC261. So it's only $14.95 for 30 days of Bossmo plus MMA. That's going to give you the top fighter projections, the ownership projections, the tools, lineup builder, and of course, premium Slack, which is just worth it just on that. It's valid through Saturday, April 24th. So you should do that. MMA is one of the DFS sports that I think has the biggest edge. I got that question in office hours today, which is another one of our premium tools. I think MMA is one of the most unsolved DFS sports. So if you are looking for that, you should get on in there. Usman and Masvidal, it's going to be the rematch, because I remember watching that, I believe. And if that's not true, that's why I don't talk about MMA, but I think it is. Anyway, let's go to make the cut. Are you ready?
I see. These are the goodies I was waiting for. I mean, enough of this top range stuff. You guys know what to do. Play Webb, play DJ, and then smash a bunch of those guys in the 9K range. Oh, okay. Play Cantley. Yeah, if you want, play Cantley. I get it from an ownership perspective, but you also have to be fully prepared for that MC next to his name.
That is true. And I think that's something that is not talked about enough in the context. You do. Cantley is, if you told me one of them up top misses, I would say it's Cantley. But I still want to play him. And that's what I think DFS golf is all about. You have to embrace a little, because if you get Cantlay right this week, you are not going to have nearly as many people. Even if he snuck through that cut and came in 40th last week, it would change the whole dynamic of this slate. So I think that's a good point by you. But let's get to it. All right. I'm going to rattle off three names. Feel free to discuss them. If you think any get clipped, let me know. First batch, we're going upper 8K range. We got Tommy Fleetwood. We've got Sergio Garcia. And the guy that I agree easily could be the defending champ in Abraham Answer.
So I'm missing the cut. That's who I'm picking. Sergio Garcia. I made some money off his missed cut. I forgot about him. That was the other ticket that I cashed that was awfully nice. Sergio Garcia last week. I feel as though this is another golf course where you would think that this would set up well for him, that he would play well here. I don't know. I just don't love what I saw at Augusta from him. I'm going to be lighter there. I know that we saw the top 10 there at the Players recently as well, which again, like smaller greens, basically a ball striking golf course, with the irons, just where you want to see some of that positive data there. But Sergio Garcia, just not somebody that's coming up a lot for me this week. Abraham Answer, we talked about last year, likes the golf course, put on an absolute ball striking spectacular there on that top end. Tommy Fleetwood just has been atrocious. And I know that it seems strange that I would like Tommy Fleetwood a little bit more than Sergio Garcia because of recent form, but I don't know. Tommy Fleetwood, I think, at 8,800 here, coming in as substantially lower owned than the other two, I'm okay taking some shots in that range on him. I would say, though, missing the cut, Tommy Fleetwood would be your front runner favorite, but I'm going to go the direction of Sergio.
I'm in line with that. I think Answer is going to be the most popular, but he probably should be. He's playing good golf. He's shown he can do it here. And Fleetwood, I think, is going to be the least popular, and he probably should be. But the thing I want to point out, he had a really bad stretch, and we couldn't understand. He had lost in six straight tournaments with the irons. And in between, he would go to Europe, and he would really strike it well. And I couldn't figure that out. He has now flipped that. He has gained in four straight events where we have strokes gain data. I can't see the Masters data, but he did make the cut there. So at least the irons are back. And I think we know, I think you would agree, if Fleetwood ever gets back to his top end form, it's going to be the ball striking that carries him there.
Oh, yeah. We see that at U.S. Opens that day that he put on that Sunday charge. He plays Shinnecock, golf courses. Yeah. Oh, it was just at Shinnecock. It was outrageous. That 63, I believe it was 63 or 64, just completely went scuba diving. And it was just ball striking spectacular, make a bunch of 10 footers. And that's going to be the Tommy Fleetwood path to success.
Yeah. So there is some merit there. Clearly he's not going to be anywhere near a cash lineup, but I think for tournaments you're getting a reasonable price, second or third man in. I have absolutely no problem with that. Sergio, you mentioned, kind of indifferent to it. He would be last of the three, though. 86, there's nothing wrong with the price, there's nothing wrong with the play, honestly. And then the last guy, I'm gonna do a bonus guy here, because he's someone that I'm a little surprised is getting a ton of ownership. What do you make of Brian Harman?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Harris English, and I'm like, no. Because Harris English has been good, yes. So they're going that direction. So Brian Harman, it really comes down to recent form. People look in the box scores, and they see those last two tournaments out for Brian Harman, and what surprises you about him getting so much ownership? Because he just kind of fits the mold, I think, of what people think about for this golf course, a short hitter who's going to just kind of plot their way around, can get high with the putter. I don't know. Like, I think he fits the mold, a really good putter for everything on this golf course. I guess it would be about appropriately owned for me in my book.
Yeah, I guess what I was looking at, because that is fair. He's making he's made every cut in 2021, and you're not getting burned in that cumulative ownership builds. I guess what I would say is that clearly he's got getting a price bump, as he should in a weaker field. But the distinction I make is Brian Harman is not a great driver of the ball, but he still gains off the tee very consistently because he knows what he's doing. His irons are not nearly as strong as you would think. He does it more with a off the tee stabilizing and a really good putter. And I think here there's a distinction there. I'd actually rather have him bleed off the tee and mitigate it and be a crisp iron player. And that's not really him. So
Tommy Fleetwood going back to him. Yeah.
I would rather have that mold than, to me, I don't know. I'm coming in under. There's no doubt. He's played this course a million times with mixed results. So we'll see. Just not really there if the field is, you know.
Well, they're there for sure. That's a big number next to his name.
No doubt about it. All right. Next batch, kind of in that lower 8K range. Guys that I'm not really on, I'll be honest. We've got Westwood, Matt Kuchar, who's an RBC guy, and Kevin Na.
I love Kevin Na this week, and not okay. just because it's my fiance's favorite golfer, because she thinks that his little girl is like the cutest child that's ever been created. When she ran out on the green, she just lost her mind. And then in Sony, seeing him like walk back to the clubhouse, she's just a big Kevin Na fan. So I think that's for brownie points as well. But I also think it's strange how many times Josh Engelman and I have like similar takes in NBA. We kind of come to the same conclusions. On your contenders video, Kevin Na was like the first guy on my betting card on Monday. I got him at 42-1 at one book. Now it's around at 40. It's sitting at 40, 41 in a couple places. I just think that there's some extreme value. You talk about somebody, and I think you did, where he just converts when he's in the situations yeah. to win golf tournaments. Like, he's like the pontification of everything you want out of an outright winner bet. And also from a DFS perspective, like, depending on where ownership lands on these guys, like, yeah, you could also have an MC next to his name and it wouldn't shock me by any means. But we know the crazy putting upside that the guy can have in tournaments. We saw it in Vegas. We've seen it at Sony. We've seen it so many times where he can get so, so hot and just win a golf tournament outright. And I know that it doesn't look pretty next to his name. I know it's not Alex's favorite guy on planet Earth, but you're playing him to go out and win you a tournament and to be a piece that you need to have if you were to score 90, 100 points and get hot with a putter.
He definitely has more win equity than most. I give him that. He closes. I just don't know. He's a tough gauge, because to me, you really could think sometimes that he's a 6K golfer, you know, in the sixes. Other times he looks like he belongs in the nines, and he's just that type of player. I think there's something to that. I like him more than Lee Westwood, for sure.
Agreed.
Matt Kuchar's tough. I thought he was building towards something, you know, after Valero and the match play really started to show some signs. He wasn't a disaster at the Masters. He got clipped on the number. I'm kind of indifferent. I think he'll still garner some interest just because of how many times former winner, you know, that he's an RBC guy through and through.
Yeah, and he sets up well for this golf course. And out of all of the guys, like, I mean, getting under 10% on a guy like Matt Kuchar, who this is like the spectacular course fit that it is for him, I'm happy getting a little bit more than the field as well on that. I know that getting double the ownership and playing a guy like Na seems counterintuitive a little bit, but maybe that's something for me to look into just a futures bet for Na again, and like kind of adding a little bit more to my ticket there and then being lighter in a DFS avenue.
Fair. There are some guys, Kisner, and that's actually a decent time to talk about him. It, for me, is someone that I bet he's 60-1. But I don't really have a ton of interest in the DFS side, because I think the miscut equity is gigantic. He's just not playing good. But when he gets it going, he can just blow a field away because he's an extreme putter. So one other guy in the eights, again, I'm going to do a little bonus here, is Harris English. You mentioned him before. I'm not a big Harris English guy, but he's playing great. He seems to find it again. This is a good course for him. I have no problem going to him for stability in the mid 8K range.
Just gaining strokes all over the lot, positive in the putting column, just playing well. There's no number you can look at, just basically all around playing well at the moment.
He really is. He absolutely is. And it doesn't pain me to say that. People think I despise Harris English.
Oh, you hate the guy. Let's be serious. You've been trashing him since before I knew you.
That's fake news. There's just certain guys that I can't get right.
So
Xander would be number one. Even on Showdown on Sunday, and it wasn't even Xander's fault. I had an amazing team, and I bubbled for a seat. Xander was on that team. It was Neiman's fault, but I'm blaming Xander. Anyway, that's not neither here nor there. We're going to go to the third batch of Make the Cut, but I want to pose this question to chat. It has nothing to do with golf, but I have to get it out there. Before the show, I was asked what I had for dinner, and I said a chicken cutlet wedge. And Mr. Lindquist and Jordan Klein behind the glass looked at me like I was speaking in code. So, chat, do you know what a wedge is? If I said I had a chicken cutlet wedge, I want answers in that chat to let me know if that's like a secret New York thing or society knows what's going on. While you answer that, we will go to the high sevens with Russell Henley, who is one of my favorite plays of the week, with Charlie Hoffman, who is absolutely scorching with the irons, and with Bobby Mack, who, credit to him, got into the Masters again next year. What do you say? Siwoo is also there. This is a loaded range.
Love it. Yeah, love this entire range. And this is why I do feel so comfortable starting in the nines with lineups, is this whole like low 8K to upper 7K range. Russell Henley, another guy that I just absolutely love here at the moment. Strokes gain data is just off the charts for him in a couple of spots here. Also, somebody who isn't like ever the strongest guy off the tee. We know the kind of putting upside that he can have. I really like Russell Henley this week. Bobby McIntyre, not going to really be there. This kind of sets up, I don't know, maybe this is just kind of like a personal bias. This golf course reminds me of a lot of like random European golf courses that they play over there. But I don't know, this would be like the closest thing to like a non-American American golf course that they would come out and play pretty well in. Shane Lowry was somebody I was taking a look at, decided not to go that direction. But maybe Bobby Mack, that's something I could talk myself into. Probably don't need to. Charlie Hoffman is my second highest owned golfer on the entire week. I just don't know why he's like, I expected him to obviously be like one of the top two or three guys. He's gaining a lot of ownership, but I think it should be a lot more. Getting 7,800 for a guy who's just disturbingly good with the irons right now, just like in an unhealthy manner. I'm going to have a crazy amount of him this week.
So Charlie Hoffman, we can't see Corrales, but here we go. Oh, a strokes gained approach in events over his last five, Valero, plus six, Players, plus 7.5, Arnold Palmer, plus 5.5, Genesis, that's going back a little, plus 4.8. He has been as good as you can be. He's obviously going to regress at some point, but the game, of course, has traveled with that. There is no reason not to like him if he's going to continue to strike like that. To me, Russell Henley, who's got ties to the area, also long-term, his irons have been just as good as Charlie Hoffman's, if not better. He's coming off a third place at the Honda. He went nuts putting there, no doubt about it, but he goes nuts putting. That's what Russell Henley can do at times. So I don't mind going to either of those guys. I guess wedge, no one knows what that means.
Everyone's not a single human being, because you're out of your mind. It's not a thing. You made it up.
It's really not. So
what is that? So when you said wedge, I thought it was like a wedge salad, but then like, why would chicken parmesan be in a wedge salad thing? Wouldn't.
It's just,
nobody has a clue.
It's a sub or a grinder. If you're from Massachusetts, I learned that when I went to UMass, I didn't know that was a thing.
Don't say that too loudly.
Yeah. We got what is, so in California, you only got subs.
We have grinder out here. Yes, we do.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. I see where you're going.
No, we have subs. We have subs.
Sandwiches, wraps, that's it. No other terms.
Nope. It's a sandwich. You could say a chicken parmesan sandwich and people are going to assume it's a sub because you're not going to put that on white bread or anything, but a wedge is just wrong. You're wrong. It's not a thing.
All right. I truly thought that wedge was just like standard lingo. Who knew? You know what, chat? Now you learn something. You go to New York, get a chicken cutlet wedge.
All right, you know more about college basketball. It's like Southwest Texas biblical, you know, at like their starting five, something like that. But when it comes to subs, you're just a little uninformed, and that's okay.
Priorities, man. You can't have it all. I know a little about golf. I know a little about chicken cutlets.
Lacrosse?
Yeah, lacrosse. Did bet lacrosse today. Mount St. Mary's got the job done, as I knew they would, over the so poor boys good. At Sacred Heart. That's neither here nor there. One other guy in the high sevens that I want to ask you about is Siwoo Kim, who, besides breaking the putter last week, once again, he just gets it done. 12th at the Masters. He's been good. Three straight top 25s. Feels accurately priced. I don't mind him, but I do like Henley and Hoffman more.
So I want to bring this up. This is one more little sidebar. So I once upon a time, back when I was like 20, 21 or something, I had a ball that was sitting next to a bridge and I decided to take my putter and I ended up bending it. And I chose to putt with a 3-wood and everybody was like, why didn't you use a wedge? And I'm like, because a 3-wood's at least flat faced. And like, you want to make putts, you're going to putt with a 3-wood. And I hadn't really seen a tour player, like normally they go to the 60 degree and blade it. And I'm like, that just seems so specific to do under pressure as opposed to taking a 3-wood. So props on Siwoo Kim for choosing, one, the right golf club for the situation. Two, performed pretty well, almost made that putt on 18, needed to make that uphiller, kept it together. I mean, could you ever imagine somebody breaking their putter, still getting a top 12 at the Masters? Pretty ridiculous. That being said, getting a bunch of ownership, I think I'm going to be lighter on him this week. It's it's just kind of an ownership fade. I can't play every single guy in the field. He's kind of like the odd man out for it. Also on this golf course, I think that you're going to see less, like, I don't want to say less variance. That's probably not the right way of saying it. But I think that there's certain demands of this golf course that a lot of people kind of fit the criteria for. And so Siwoo doesn't necessarily have to be the guy like, doesn't have to necessarily be the guy that I have to lean on in that range. When Matt Kuchar kind of does, like plays this golf course, has better form, and you're getting a little less ownership. Like a lot less ownership going to Na. I've talked about a little bit putting upside. Russell Henley, I think we both like a little, like slightly less ownership. I mean, I get it because the strokes gain data is great, but what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I mean, again, I do think you have to always evaluate plays in the confines of the slate and the opportunity cost. So again, it's easy. We try not to do this because we're obviously trying to help. It's easy to say, well, I like that guy too. I'd love to get over. You can't get over on everyone. You only have 600%, you know, to add up to. And, you know, you've got those guys. So I don't mind guys like Siwoo at all, but I really want Henley as a priority. I think Hoffman's playing good golf. You've got guys like Bez. Poulter makes the cut here basically automatically. Chris Kirk is playing good golf as we work down. I don't mind that guy. Again, kind of indifferent. And then we get to the lower sevens, which is where I want to, again, ask you another set. I'll throw in Chris Kirk because I do want to get your thoughts on him. My guy Griot is there. Loves small greens, loves shorter courses. And then one more guy is Adam Hadwin, who's putting out of his mind to kind of round out that 7K range. Is this a dead zone, or do you think there are some good plays here?
I mean, I'm probably going to be on Griot with you. I think that that's probably just, isn't that like a plug and play for you every single week? I don't mind him. Obviously, if you get any kind of surface of a putter, like any existence of a putter, you could be looking at winning upside in that range. Chris Kirk is probably the easiest guy to cheer for on tour, fought a lot of addiction issues. Somebody that I really do think is a pretty darn good ball striker, just very even keel. 7,500, I think there's enough win equity, but he's coming in like extremely popular in that range. I think he projects out well with Alex as well. I was getting lighter there as well. We don't want to be playing every single guy chalky down in these ranges. And I think a guy even like Matt Wallace above him, who's coming off of, you know, playing fairly well the last 2 weeks, 34th at the Masters, third at the Valero. I think I would rather go take the ownership discount with Matt Wallace and try to spike a putting upside with him there, a great putter, rather than like eating the crazy chalk of Chris Kirk.
Yeah, again, I think in ranges like this, ownership becomes even more prevalent because to me, the margins are very small. If you line these guys up in head-to-heads, you know, depending on what you're getting, like maybe at best, you're getting minus 150, minus 140. It, like if you're getting 1/4 the ownership, that is a massive long-term EV move. Some cases it's almost blind at that point if you're talking direct pivots. So I will look to that. You don't need to do it on every play, of course, but if you're looking to leverage, that's how I'd go about it. Griot, of course, is someone I'm interested in. Aaron Wise, if he can flip the putter, everything else is really good. He's finally found the tee to green game, but he loses 4 strokes putting seemingly every week. He's lost more than 4 strokes putting in 4 of 6 events. It's very hard to handle that, but maybe, you know, we've seen some, you see a lot about Poa kind of flipping everything with putting, and maybe there's some element to that that can help a guy like Wise.
Yeah, where you're just blindly hitting the putts and, okay, so this is just a little bit more of a golf perspective thing too. When you get like aerated greens on a golf course, which is when they go and punch the holes in the golf course, it's like a winter thing that they'll do, and then they'll do it again in the summer. It's just so like the greens can breathe. I don't know if you're familiar with that process whatsoever, but basically it puts a bunch of blemishes onto the golf, like onto the greens, and you go out and putt. And you don't really think about it because you don't expect it to go in because there's just so many bumps on the green and you're not really worried about it. Poa can do that for you mentally too, where it's like, oh, you miss a 4-footer. It wasn't a bad stroke. It hit something and didn't go in. And you can kind of like chalk it up as whatever else. It's variance. And the rest of the field is going to have bad bounces as well, because you do have such fine margins in putting where something is just 1 degree off. And that's the difference between hitting the hole and not hitting the hole on an 8-footer. So I think having some blemished greens is not necessarily a bad thing, especially for bad putters who are going to have bad strokes anyway, and, you know, basically be lagging it to a certain extent. Like, I think I would probably prioritize putting less in that situation. That being said, we've seen multiple times that putting is a good thing to be targeting on this golf course.
Yeah, you said a lot of stuff that I don't even know what destroying the greens and then putting that means nothing to me. But the last part makes a ton of sense. And I do think there is some elements of that you can get into it. All right, a couple other guys before we get to the deep dives. JT Poston, I do think, is a worthwhile flyer. A lot of risk, I want to be clear. This is a guy that he really hasn't been striking it well. His irons are a serious red flag. The thing I like about him is he's volatile within the stats. So when he gains a lot. And when he loses a lot. I'll take that every day because it spikes upside when you get it right. So that's where I'm at with him. Can I get you on board with what could be only 36 holes?
The postman is my hot take. I think T5s for the first time this week. That's my guy that I've narrowed in on. You talk about a great putter. He's a great putter.
Yes, he is.
Second in strokes gain data on overseeded Poana grass. So phenomenal putter on this type of surface. We saw that win that he had in Charlotte. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal putter of the golf ball. And yes, as you said, has those weeks where it's just going to be atrocious. Yeah, you could get 36 holes, but I am definitely going to be over there in a major way. Plus 2,800 to get a top five on him over on Odd Shopper. I'm going to be there definitely.
All right. Well, this is even better because if he does good, I'll say that we were on him. And if he does very bad, that was your hot take.
Oh, okay. That didn't go the way I was expecting. That wasn't very nice.
Yeah, it's being a season veteran of
you just
show.
Put a wedge between us.
See what you did there. Also, yeah, just to go back to that for a second, hero is also a term that is out there in the world. Do you have
I know
hero?
What that is.
Okay.
Yeah, I got that. Hero, it's like the Greek. It's the that's Greek sandwich. I don't know what a wedge is.
That's maybe a New York City-esque thing. I don't know.
It's a thing.
Hey, chicken farm is chicken farm. Anyway, a couple other names, Harry Higgs, HV3. These are guys I can get down with. No problem with them at their price tags. Let's get to the deep dive. These guys, 6K range, their names. There's no doubt about it. You can go there. The first guy, I'm just going to throw one, and then we'll open it up. Matthew Neesmith is a name I keep coming across, and he has incredible iron flashes. The price seems reasonable, but it's someone I also don't fully grasp exactly what his skill set is. It looks like he can't putt. That I can confirm. Is that just maybe someone who maybe is a stat darling, or you think there's something to that?
I think he's basically a pretty flat putter. I mean, he doesn't get up and down very frequently. He's kind of like mediocre, it looks like, around the greens. Yeah, he's actually very subpar around the greens. I'd be okay with it if you were to see that, but I don't know. I feel like when you get down in this range, he is garnering a little bit of attention already. I think you can go a little bit lower, and if you go right below him to Doug Gim, our boy, you're getting half the ownership.
Doug Gim is someone we've talked a lot about on the show. A lot of talent, seems to be finding it. So just to kind of extend that right back to you, you are comfortable going right to him?
Yeah, I'm massively overweight on Doug Gim right now. I was projecting out really well for me. I guess I should say, Matt Neesmith, I'm basically at the field. So not somebody that I dislike. Definitely had some merit to be going that direction. But I think Doug Gim is a better all-around player. If you want to talk about strokes gained, also somebody whose profile is even a little bit better than Neesmith, and you're getting half the ownership.
Other than that, I mean, again, I still think there are names here. You've got Brant Snedeker is someone he flashed, and I don't know where he's at. I think he's probably a better bet than play. This is a guy, he made the article, which is free this week if you want to check out my Above the Cut article. Stuart Sink is on fire. You've got to give him, he's found some form. He's 19th at Honda, 12th at the Masters. The ball striking is there. I rarely play him, but the irons are crisp. I'm going to play him in some of my lineups.
He came out of nowhere and won the Safeway last year. And I think since then, he's just kind of like riding a high. He's like, I know I have my card for another couple of years to be able to hang out and just do the thing. It looks like he's playing very free. That's kind of a weird note to give on a player, but just looks very relaxed out there. You get to this age group of guys and they just start grinding and trying to compete with guys. He kind of knows who he is, plays his own game. I really can't say anything about Stuart Sink that would be a negative. We obviously saw earlier this season, not such great form, but the last two truly been fantastic. So I don't mind taking some shots on him for sure. The guy I wanted to get your opinion on is Brant Snedeker, who I believe two shows ago, we kind of, we gave him the shaft being like, I'm Brant Snedeker. He's not going to do anything. I just missed, you know, it was strange to see him as cheap as what he was on that slate. I believe he was 6,600. Now coming off of a sixth place at Valero, what are you going to do with him this week?
So he's someone, he made my betting video because I do think that the upside is there and he can come out of nowhere, as we saw at Valero. I just worry that it's chasing a little bit. I don't know. I think the honest answer is we don't know. Did he find something or is it just an outlier? And Sneds can do that. He gets hot. He flips something. So I wouldn't mind if you wanted to go there, but I'll say this. You've got a decent amount of names. Chase Seifert is there. Stuart Sink is there. You know, a couple other guys in that same range. Doc Redman is someone that chat brought up. I don't think it's the best course for him, to be honest. And I kind of want to see where the game is at before I hop back on. But he is a young guy, got some talent. You've mentioned Gim. I don't know if I'm going to have room for Sneds just because it's blindly tailing. If he missed the cut at Valero, we would not have brought him up at all. I think you're basing a lot off four rounds of golf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that makes for a great outright bet too. And he wouldn't necessarily even have to be somebody who's optimal, and you could pay off and get a top 20, I believe is what. Did you have a top 20 on him was the number?
I actually bet him. I bet him top five because I think the upside 14-1. That was a pure number play.
That's a number.
That number is gone. I saw 11 ish, but I felt good about that. Just a splash.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. I mean, why not? And again, you want to talk about somebody who can get hot with a putter, probably the best putter on tour of the last like 10 years overall. Just an unbelievable putter when he gets it going.
All right, a couple things. Comments from chat. Cody Sheridan with a fantastic comment that I got to fix. Only 59 likes. We're going to push this up, chat. Let's give it a big push and get to triple digits, and we will be done. We got a lot of people in here. It's good to see. Even after the Masters, the crew stays loyal, and we appreciate you guys so much. Let's give it one big push. Hit the thumbs up. Subscribe to that channel. We really appreciate it. It helps us out, and it means a lot, even if no one knows what a wedge is. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Another comment from chat, friend of the show, Ryan W, says the mega mind genius play of the week is Tom Lewis. That might be true because Tom Lewis is dangerously insane. I just don't know what to make of that guy in life. He's starting to make cuts. I don't know if he'll string it together. When he does, it's massive upside. He can't putt right now, though. Did you even look at Tom Lewis, or is that just a cross off?
Yeah, that's a definite cross off for me. I mean, I know under 1%. I would rather, and I don't know if we're looking at anybody under 67. Do you have like a guy? Like we all have like a guy that we like Anirban Lahiri came off of Valero as well, had a fifth. If you want to put him in the same bucket as a guy like Brant Snedeker, who can just randomly flash some stuff, not the strongest field, like I wouldn't mind going that direction. I think I would be really comfortable taking some shots on Jim Furyk still. Previous winner, 2010 was a long time ago, but if you want to talk course fit and somebody who can go low, why not Jim Furyk?
I mean, yeah, Jim Furyk kind of does what he does. Plenty of experience. That's an understatement. Do I have a guy? Yeah, I got a guy. I got Ben Martin, Bermuda Benny. He's not Poa Benny, but I don't really care. He'll be fine. He's 6,400. I think if you're in a jam, this is a guy that there's definitely some truth that I just like the guy. But at the same time, he's playing better golf than you would think. He's making the most of these starts. He was ninth at Corrales. It got him into Valero, 34th there. He's got some experience on this course. He certainly benefits from this type of track. I think we've seen that. This is a long time ago. He does have a third place here. It was over 7 years ago. I'm not using that as justification, but I mentioned it. So take that for what it's worth. But we've seen him at coastal tracks, certainly excel. And I think Ben Martin's the type of guy, he can make some cuts. And at 6,400, you give me four rounds, you've done your job.
Oh, last guy I want to throw into the bucket as well. Jason, I saw, liked him as well on the PGA plays. Patton Kizzire. I think he just profiles a lot better than for this kind of a golf course. Not a great driver of the golf ball. So I'm happy to be taking some shots because he does just about everything else pretty darn well. What do you think about him?
Where? Let me.
6,500, Patton Kizzire.
See, the things that I use, I think they automatically pull Patton Kizzire, make my life a little easier because I don't like talk about someone I root against, not for any reason. I'm sure he's a very nice guy in life. That guy's game is disturbing. When he ripped off those wins, it seemingly every week, that was many years ago now, but yeah, so just to tie this back and then we'll get to some bets and we'll bounce on out of here. He has the profile that I at least would want. It's kind of like Webb, whereas Brian Harman to me, gains off the tee, which is almost a net detriment. Pat Kizire loses off the tee every week. He gains with the irons. He gains with the putter. That's the combo that I would rather have. So I see absolutely why you would want to go there. You just need to spike the upside with the putter, and he has certainly shown he is live to do that.
All right. I know he's gaining some ownership in that range and kind of goes against whatever, but 5% is negligible. I'm happy to be over top on that.
Yeah. And this is a week that I think that your placement points will not be nearly as correlated to the top as something like the Masters. It's just, it's wide open. Tyler Duncan has made an appearance in the chat. We got a lot of names out there.
Oh, man. I'm going to vomit. Dunks.
You know, again, I think you want to be, you want to be aggressive down here without being stupid. I think you can take some shots. Absolutely. You just don't want to play too many guys. And that would kind of be where I'd go. Let's go quickly to bets of the week. Go to oddshopper.awesomeo.com. This is where me and Eric are getting the odds. This is where Jason and Josh and the whole team, we are. You get value. You shop around, you find those numbers. A couple guys I want to mention for the full card, certainly go find the PGA Contenders video. It's like 10 minutes, very easy watch, and I think you guys will enjoy it. But two guys that I looked at, they caught my eye for top 10s. Neesmith and Stewart Cink are both 11-1. I think it's one way if you don't get to them in your DFS lineups, just solid enough players that could get there. Was there something that you went to? I know you mentioned JT Poston. Is there anything else in the betting side that you wanted to kind of throw in here?
Yeah, so I kind of scattered shot like three outrights, basically. Kevin Na, somebody I brought up, plus 4,000 is currently what he's at on Odd Shopper. 4,200 is what I banked it in at. Russell Henley, plus 5,000 is part of my betting card as well. Your boy, my boy, love him. Charlie Hoffman, plus 4,500. It's just a big number to get a guy who, again, is playing about as well as anybody in this field, which is hard to say because he's 7,800 and getting, you know, about average respect for just how good the form is here of late. So I think between those three, that those are nice numbers to be locking in, all above plus 4,000. I'm rarely going to ever be on favorites unless I'm getting a really nice number on them. So I like going that direction. And then Kizire plus 2,900 top five. And I talked to him as well. That's a big number, plus 2,900 top five, and JT Poston plus 2,800. So pretty big numbers on all five of my pieces. But if I hit one, I'm looking really, really nice.
It is that kind of week for betting where some cards, just like DFS, you know, we get questions all the time in premium Slack, like how many guys should I use for 50 lineups? And it really depends. This week for betting, I think it's better to kind of flatten a little bit and take more guys. This is wide open in my opinion. I'm going to have a larger betting card than I normally do. Sometimes I just hone in on like, you know, a handful of guys and really try to nail one. Here I'm gonna have pieces of a lot of guys. I might add Pat and Kizire after I rip them on the show here, just to get some good karma points.
Thank you.
Anyway, let's go. One last thing I want to ask you about this actually, and then we will get to hot takes and chat, then we will get out of here. John Augustine is a name of a play. Okay,
this don't even know who that is.
This
don't
show even know who has that is. A new, we have turned over a new page. No offense to my good friend, Jason Roslin, who was in chat. That is the response when I say John Augustine. That's the face that I normally make on the show. Because talk about a creative player. He made the cut at the Masters last year. He's done absolutely nothing. And I just wanted to ask you if he was someone on your radar. He is not on mine. Talented guy, I'm sure. I just was wondering where you fell with him.
Who is that? I don't know who that is. Is that somebody that Jason brought up as a plausible thing to put money on?
You know, he has his finger on the pulse of these up-and-coming guys.
The guy is an unbelievable DFS player, an unbelievable advice giver. That being said,
Pat. I was also, you know, that was during the show yesterday, and I was not, my organs weren't fully functioning, so maybe I misheard him on that show. Who knows? But anyway.
DJ Augustine plays for the Houston Rockets now. Does that count?
Okay. I bet the Houston Rockets tonight. They're going to win outright. You heard it here first. And when they don't, stop on by on the tip-off show. I'll be on it tomorrow. And you can remind me of what a donkey comment that was. But anyway, speaking of donkey comments, let's wrap this up. Let's go to our hot takes here. I'm going to just pass it to you. If you want to talk more about JT Poston, I love that call. It's an explosive play. Anything else to add on him before I say something.
No, so JT Poston, plus 2,800 top five, hasn't top fived yet this year. But I think that between course fit, between the amount of upside that exists at a number that is that big, I'm happy to be rolling the dice on him there. Also, Colin Morikawa miscut.
Ooh, all right. Hold on.
The Bryson miscut, I almost got there with. The 76 round one, I was looking really nice at that plus 620. He was the biggest number on the board. And he just plays high variance golf. And, you know, I talked a little bit about how the greens book was going to be a difference maker for him. Not a great putter on those surfaces. Hasn't really shown out at Augusta yet. Thought I was going to convert that ticket, and he just played really good round two.
I believe me, when Bryson was struggling, there were a couple thoughts on my mind. One was, man, my DFS lineups have serious issues for a lot of reasons. But the other I thought was your hot take. You said that Bryson, with no greens book, could run into some problems. And listen, long term, I do think he'll finally figure Augusta out. He's going to have about 30, 50 more chances. But right now, he does not have it figured out. And his ability to overpower, it's just not there yet. So fascinating thing. We will see Augusta next year, and I look forward to it. My hot take, I was going to say something about Ben Martin, who I think is sneaky. I'm going to take a shot, though, with a guy who's a damn good player, and I think people like him at DFS, but they don't equate him to winning because he hasn't broken through. I think Fitzy's going to win. I really do. I got him a little higher. He was 28-1. That's down to 24-1. But he is someone I believe has the skill set, certainly has the putting, and he's a winner. It's just not here. He's won many times in Europe in fields that are comparable to this in some regard, some quality tournaments over there. I'm going to call for Matthew Fitzpatrick to get his first PGA Tour win at the Heritage this week.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, I haven't been there. I'm going to have to reconsider that a little bit. I know how popular he's going to be, and I think that was mainly part of it. He's going to be popular. Perfect course fit for him, though. Really like that bet.
Yeah, so we're going to give it a shot. We'll see. Hot take, Sam Burns wins. That is, if that happens, my friend, you come back and chat. I will find some type of giveaway to give you, because that would be something. This was fun as always, chat. It's such a good time. Like I said, if there's anything on the show that you think, you know, would really help you guys out that we don't cover, hit us up. We're always looking for feedback. We want to give you guys the best content that we can do. That's what we're all about here at Awesomeo. So on that note, we are going to bounce on out. Get ready. You will see us both tomorrow on various shows. The team has got you covered from baseball to basketball to golf to MMA, as I've mentioned, with UFC 261 or whatever it is. Yeah, UFC 261. Get in there because we've got that promo, 50% off your first month. The promo code is UFC 261, so you actually do have to remember which number it is. That is important. So on that note, let me bounce on out of here. Good luck this weekend, chat. We will be back next week, same time, same place. Who remembers the numbers on UFC? It's impossible.
They create a player number.
They should go in order of, they should restart each year.